Chapter 46. Dear father, how can you do it? ... The poor fellow stood gazing at her, overflowing with sympathy, but not knowing what to make of this, until, having taken out her handkerchief, and put it to her still averted face, she hurried away. At first he remained stock still, then hurried after her. Miss Amy, pray, will you have the goodness to stop a moment? Miss Amy, if it comes to that, let me go. I shall go out of my senses, if I have to think, that I have driven you away like this. ... His trembling voice, and unfeigned earnestness brought little Dora to a stop. Oh, I don't know what to do, ... she cried, I don't know what to do. ... The young John, who had never seen her bereft of her quiet self-command, who had seen her from her infancy ever so reliable and self-suppressed, there was a shock in her distress, and in having to associate himself with it as its cause, that shook him from his great hat to the pavement. He felt it necessary to explain himself. He might be misunderstood, supposed to mean something, or to have done something, that had never entered into his imagination. He begged her to hear him explain himself, as the greatest favor she could show him. Miss Amy, I know very well, that your family is far above mine. It were vain to conceal it. There never was a Chivery a gentleman, that ever I heard of, and I will not commit the meanness of making a false representation on a subject so momentous. Miss Amy, I know very well, that your high-souled brother, and likewise your spirited sister, spurn me from a height. What I have to do, is to respect them, to wish to be admitted to their friendship, to look up at the eminence on which they are placed from my lowlier station, for, whether viewed as tobacco or viewed as the lock, I well know it is lowly, and ever wish them well and happy. ... There really was a genuineness in the poor fellow, and a contrast between the hardness of his hat, and the softness of his heart, albeit, perhaps, of his head too, that was moving. Little Dorrit entreated him to disparage neither himself nor his station, and, above all things, to divest himself of any idea that she supposed hers to be superior. This gave him a little comfort. Miss Amy, ... he then stammered, I have had for a long time ages they seem to me revolving ages a heart-cherished wish to say something to you. May I say it? ... Little Dorrit involuntarily started from his side again, with the faintest shadow of her former look. Conquering that, she went on at great speed half across the bridge without replying. May I, Miss Amy, I but ask the question humbly, may I say it? I have been so unlucky already in giving you pain without having any such intentions, before the holy heavens, that there is no fear of my saying it, unless I have your leave. I can be miserable alone, I can be cut up by myself, why should I also make miserable, and cut up one, that I would fling myself off that parapet to give half a moment's joy to? Not that that's much to do, for I do it for twopence. ... The mournfulness of his spirits, and the gorgeousness of his appearance, might have made him ridiculous, but that his delicacy made him respectable. Little Dorrit learnt from it what to do. If you please, John Chivery, ... she returned, trembling, but in a quiet way, since you are so considerate, as to ask me, whether you shall say any more if you please, no. ... Never, Miss Amy? ... No, if you please. Never. ... Oh Lord. ... Gasped young John. But perhaps you will let me, instead, say something to you. I want to say it earnestly, and with as plain a meaning as it is possible to express. When you think of us, John, I mean my brother, and sister, and me, don't think of us as being any different from the rest. For, whatever we once were, which I hardly know, we ceased to be long ago, and never can be any more. It will be much better for you, and much better for others, if you will do that instead, of what you are doing now. ... Young John dolefully protested, that he would try to bear it in mind, and would be heartily glad to do anything she wished. As to me, apostrophe said Little Dorrit, think as little of me as you can. The less, the better. When you think of me at all, John, let it only be as the child you have seen grow up in the prison with one set of duties always occupying her, as a weak, retired, contented, unprotected girl. I particularly want you to remember that when I come outside the gate, I am unprotected and solitary. Apostrophe, he would try to do anything she wished. But why did Miss Amy so much want him to remember that? Because, apostrophe returned Little Dorrit, I know I can then quite trust you, not to forget today, and not to say any more to me. You are so generous, that I know I can trust to you for that. And I do, and I always will. I am going to show you, at once, that I fully trust you. I like this place, where we are speaking better than any place I know. Apostrophe her slight color had faded, but her lover thought he saw it coming back just then, and I may be often here. I know it is only necessary for me to tell you so, to be quite sure, that you will never come here again in search of me. And I am quite sure. Apostrophe, she might rely upon it, said young John. He was a miserable wretch, but her word was more than a law for him. And goodbye, John, apostrophe said Little Dorrit. And I hope you will have a good wife one day, and be a happy man. I am sure you will deserve to be happy, and you will be, John. Apostrophe, as she held out her hand to him with these words, the heart that was under the waistcoat of Sprigg's mere slop work, if the truth must be known, swelled to the size of the heart of a gentleman. And the poor common little fellow, having no room to hold it, burst into tears. Oh, don't cry, apostrophe said Little Dorrit piteously. Don't. Goodbye, John. God bless you. Apostrophe, goodbye, Miss Amy. Goodbye. Apostrophe, and so he left her. First observing that she sat down on the corner of a seat, and not only rested her little hand upon the rough wall, but laid her face against it too, as if her head were heavy, and her mind were sad. It was an affecting illustration of the fallacy of human projects, to behold her lover, with the great hat pulled over his eyes, the velvet collar turned up, as if it rained, the plum-colored coat buttoned to conceal the silken waistcoat of golden sprigs, and the little direction post pointing inexorably home, creeping along by the worst back streets, and composing, as he went, the following new inscription for a tombstone in St. George's Churchyard. Here lie the mortal remains of John Chivery, never anything worth mentioning, who died about the end of the year 1826, of a broken heart, requesting with his last breath, that the word Amy might be inscribed over his ashes, which was accordingly directed to be done, by his afflicted parents. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.